HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi guys, I'm Prasad Banerjee and I write about tech at Mint.
And this is TechCetera, a podcast
where we tackle some hot topics in technology
and also
bust some myths. Today's episode is a fun one. Over the past year or so, there's been a lot of talk about India's upcoming liberalized space policy. The Indian Space Research Organization, or the ISRO, has existed since 1969. And in those 50 plus years, the country has never allowed a private firm to conduct its own space missions. Essentially, ISRO had a monopoly of sorts on the space sector as far as India was concerned. This changed on November 18th, when a company called Skyroot Aerospace was allowed to send a rocket called Vikram S up in space. The mission was a landmark since it marked the opening of India's space sector to private firms. Skyroot's mission was hence aptly called Prarambh, which in Hindi means the beginning. Opening the space sector to private firms takes some of the load off ISRO, allowing the research organization to do what it should, that is, explore space and conduct research, just like America's NASA. This strategy has been employed effectively by countries like the US over the past decade. In fact, with companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, the US has the largest market share in the global space market today. With the liberalized space policy, which we heard will be official in a matter of months, India is expected to invite private firms into the space race. And Skyroot is among the frontrunners to capitalize on this move. If you haven't guessed already, this episode is about that company. I spoke to Pawan Chandana, who is the co-founder and CEO of Skyroot Aerospace. Pawan is a mechanical engineer from IIT Kharagpur, and he worked as a scientist in ISRO's Rocket Design Center for about 6 years before starting his own firm. Before we recorded this episode, my producer Ankita and I were really worried that a scientist like Pawan might make things too technical or scientific. But he actually did a really good job of simplifying space for us and what Skyroot is doing. We discuss things like why India needs private space firms in the first place, where the country stands in the global scheme of things, what Skyroot's future plans are, and the Vikram S rocket in itself. I think you'll find what Pawan had to say very interesting. So here we go. Pawan Chandana from Skyroot.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So, Pawan Chandana is the co-founder and CEO of Skyroot Aerospace. Welcome to TechCetera.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Prasidit. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
You know, you did something that has never been done before. You conducted India's first private space mission. I just wanted to start there. What does conducting the first private space mission for India mean? Why is it significant? Why is it such a significant development for the country?
Yeah, so as you may be aware, you know, so I mean, ISRO has been there for the last probably, you know, 60 years, since the 1960s, when the Indian space program has started. And, you know, it's the first time in history, you know, after ISRO, a private company designed, built and launched a rocket to space. And also, like, it's a momentous achievement, considering that the government has unlocked the sector to private players just a couple of years ago in 2020. And, you know, and also, like, we may hear a lot about SpaceX, Blue Origin, you know, a lot of emerging private companies across the world. And in fact, we are very proud of their achievements as well. So it's the first time an Indian company has built a world-class, you know, space vehicle or a rocket and launched to space, you know, within just a period of 2 years. And also the same time when the policy has started in the country, you know, allowing private players to build their own, you know, rockets and satellites and launch. So this is a very big event that it opens up a much wider frontiers in India's, you know, space history. And that's where, like, you know, the recent Vikram S launch and what we call it as Prarambh mission is a great Prarambh for a new era in the space sector in the country.
Got it. But tell me something, why do we need private firms to come into this space sector in the first place? What is the relevance
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. In fact, you know, as you know, India is among the top 5 spacefaring nations. You know, just imagine the entire world of space community, and India is in the top 5 countries doing a space program. you know, our budget is like, you know, close to $2 billion every year, which is one of the largest, you know, space budgets in the world. And, you know, we have been like all over with great milestones and achievements, like with the Chandrayaan mission, Mangalyaan, you know, going to the moon, going to the Mars, and first time, you know, making it a success. You know, several accolades to the India space program, which is like top five in the world. But it's also, you know, if you look at the space commerce, which India does, it's less than 2% of the global market. You know, so even though we are top five technologically, but still, like, you know, our share in the global space market is less than 2%. And that's where, you know, the government thought that we have an ecosystem of almost like 60 years, you know, a lot of talent, a lot of manufacturers, a lot of infrastructure built in the country in the form of launch pads, test facilities, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So government thought that, you know, we should increase this pie, which is just 2% right now, to a much larger pie in the global space ecosystem. You know, the ambitious target is to reach, you know, at least 10% of the global space market. And that requires opening up of the space, of the private sector, because the private sector core focus would be commercialization of space, while the government space agency, even though with a lot of accolades, its core focus is doing government missions, you know, launching satellites for the government, for national needs, for the common man, basically. So we wanted to extend the, you know, reach of, you know, space technology and also like space commerce beyond the government, which only can be done by the private space sector. And that will result in, you know, increasing our India's share from 2% to a significant number globally.
Got it. When in other sectors, when we sort of say that, you know, India's share in this sector is increasing, we imply that there is a sort of an impact on, say, GDP, there's an impact on the economy. Is that how it goes for space as well? When we say that, let's take a larger pie share of this market, is that how it goes? Will it? How does it impact the economy?
Yeah, so in fact, it impacts in various ways. You know, first is it contributes to the GDP, and also a contribution of a strategic sector like space, you know, goes a long way. Because without space, today we cannot imagine life, because it makes our life better through great communication services, through, you know, direct to home television, GPS, you know, whatnot. You know, today we are highly dependent on space-based services, and tomorrow, in next 5 years, you know, space-based internet for everybody is going to become a reality. You know, and lot more space services are going to come up for everybody. So it impacts, first thing is that it affects human lives to become better, number one, and it increases our GDP to an extent, number two, and also it creates a higher competency in a strategic sector like space, you know, because space is, you know, something which every country needs, you know, because space is also, you know, something going to, in fact, less than 10 countries in the world can build their own rocket and launch to space. You know, so that's the kind of strategic sector where every country needs that sovereign capability of space access, because space has no boundaries and space has so many services which we all depend upon, and we cannot, any country cannot risk not having a sovereign capability of going to space. So becoming very competitive in this particular sector, which is very important strategically for the country, is a very big moon. And also it generates a lot of high-tech employment, a lot of pride to the country. And in fact, like our Mars mission has become a poster boy for India's capability on a global scale. Right. So several things involved here in addition to commerce, you know, there's a lot of strategic reasons why space is very important and we need to be competent in the global scale.
You mentioned space services a few times here, right? I understand Skyroot's, the first mission that we all covered and has been widely covered, actually, that was a demonstrator mission. So what's next? What are these space services that, say, Skyroot would be involved in? What do you plan going forward?
To start off with, we'll be launching satellites to space, and more specifically small satellites to space, you know. In the next 10 years, it is estimated that, you know, over 40,000 satellites will be launched to space, and majority of them will be commercial satellites. and almost 80% of them will be small satellites. That is like satellites below 500 kilograms. And just like our smartphones, satellites are getting smaller and lighter. And, you know, and next is a generation of, you know, a lot of satellites and satellite constellations. That means thousands and thousands of satellites to be launched to space, offering lot and lot of services when it comes to communication, Earth observation, navigation, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, right. So all these services need satellites to get into space. And also satellites do have a lifetime of, you know, 5 to 10 years. So they need to be replenished, and the more and more new and fresh satellites with fresh technologies need to be launched again to space. So it's a very good cycle of launch requirement on which the entire space industry is based out of. And our focus is basically to getting these small satellites, which are defined as anything below 500 kilograms, from Earth to space. You know, so that's the core. It's more like, you know, transportation service from Earth to space is what we, you know, focus on, and we believe that is the key to space. That is the that's where like our focus lies, mostly on space launch service.
We often hear that, you know, even a company like Apple today wants to launch satellites because they have to provide, not necessarily launch, but they want satellites in space to provide services on their phone. So when you say there will be these commercial services with respect to communication and Earth observation and so on, are these the kind of missions that we are talking about, if not specifically Apple?
Yeah, so one of the biggest application, like you mentioned, is communications. And in fact, like only 10% of the Earth's surface is actually covered with cellular networks. That means you will get some sort of connectivity through your smartphone or a mobile only on the 10% area of the Earth. The other 90% is traditionally covered with space and will always be covered with space. So that is, you know, that's where like space becomes very active for, you know, communication on Earth across the, you know, entire Earth surface. And another big advantage, or like, you know, big application of space, is Earth observation. So that means like the satellites have cameras, or, you know, in various frequencies, they image Earth every day, and these images are used for by many industries. You know, for example, it is used for urban planning, it is used for disaster management, it is used to detect gas leaks in their oil pipelines, it is used to detect encroachments from space, it is used by defense for monitoring the borders. You know, several industries use these space-based images, because satellites give a synoptic view. That means it gives a very large view of Earth, and it gives an understanding of what is happening for various industries, and that itself is a multi-billion dollar industry today. And so basically, these, number one is communications, and number two is Earth observations, are two big applications which we call traditionally call space services. And in next 5 years, basically there will be like 24/7, you know, coverage. You know, that means every place on Earth will be, you know, monitored through space-based satellites, or probably almost every day at very high cadence. And also almost we'll get internet from space quite often, directly from space, without needing the terrestrial infrastructures. And, you know, 50 billion plus devices will be covered through, you know, IoT from space. You know, so a lot and lot of exciting stuff which is going to happen in the next 5 years, which will be fueled by what we say is the small satellite revolution, where, like, you know, satellites become smaller, cheaper, you know, and the launch costs go cheaper. So this creates a new economy of space-based services which benefit mankind like never before.
We often hear in the US and all them talking about even things like space tourism and all. Is that also part of this entire, all of these goals that you guys are looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, like, one of the potential future space markets is space tourism. You know, because everybody wants to spend a day, or, you know, maybe a few minutes in space, right? So there is a natural curiosity and natural fascination, you know, to go to space for everybody. You know, however, today it's extremely expensive and very unreliable. In fact, that's the reason why only astronauts are hailed as national heroes, because they risk their lives to go to space, right? So today it's quite expensive and you know, not so reliable that all of us can you know, afford it and sit on a rocket and go to space. Now, however, now with the kind of technology leap which is happening, especially in the space launch segment, where more and more innovation is happening and more rocket launches are happening every year. So we'll see a point where it becomes so reliable and so affordable, that everybody can one day afford to go to space, and space tourism becomes a big reality. And in fact, a couple of companies are pushing very big. Is one is Virgin Galactic and the other is Blue Origin, who have just started, did their first few flights and also rolling out their commercial space tourism packages soon.
True. And you mentioned the expense here, right? Space has been an expensive sector. Things are becoming cheaper as economies, we hit economies of scale to an extent. And India's pitch here seems to be that, we will provide more low-cost services, right? But does it work the same way with space as it does in other sectors? Because this is a very high, the safety requirements are much higher. It's not like we can just use another material in place of what is being used.
Correct.
So the low-cost pitch, right?
Yeah.
Is there a limitation to it? Is there a limitation to what we can and cannot do?
Yeah. So today, there is a low cost pitch, in the same way as, what is the advantage in the IT sector, for example. So here it's a cost efficient to build, let's say a software from India, because India has very cost effective engineers, a very large set of engineers who could build great software. So IT revolution has happened, as we all know, and that fuels our economy in a large way. The same advantage also exists in space, because we have a good amount of skill base available in the country, which is very cost effective compared to other nations. So that naturally gives a cost advantage, similar to what we have in the IT sector, even though it's deep tech, but still, that kind of expertise exists in the country. Thanks to ISRO for 60 years, it's been building that capabilities for the country. So number one. And number two is, of course, the cost, just because of the cost effective manpower or the engineering talent available in the country. Even though that's a good advantage, but still, the even more important is to innovate on the technology, to build a better technology than the competitors or the competing countries or competing companies. Is very, very important. So basically what I would say is that typically first importance should be on innovating to the best, which will reduce costs. Like, for example, using more efficient materials, more efficient fuels, more better architectures in building space vehicles or spacecrafts, etc. So using cutting edge innovation, you bring the cost down. And number two is, anyway, of course, be as cost effective by the nature of the country itself. That also has, anyway, on the background, is going to by default give a good cost advantages. When these both come together, I think that's where we India has a great advantage in the international market, that being a very innovative and cost effective product and solution in the space sector, I think it's very difficult for many people to compete if both of these equations go well with any company or any kind of product or service coming from India.
And I want to understand how it is like to be a startup in this sector. You're competing against, at a global scale here, right? You're competing against companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, which have existed for quite a while now. There are billionaires backing them, they have huge funding. From that entire perspective, what is it like to be a startup here? Is there a hurry because geopolitically Cosmodrome has been shut down? Is there a hurry to get services out there? How long, what kind of sort of roadmaps are you building for yourself? If you could explain all of that.
Yeah, sure. So in fact, space is a global market. And so always whenever we build a product or service, it is always for the world to have that product or service. It's typically a very global market. So whenever we build any product, we have to think globally. And like you said, we have to compete with the best in the world. But what we believe is that, for example, SpaceX is a 20-year-old company. Blue Origin is, I think, almost like 22-year-old company. It started in 2000. And even Virgin is, started more than a decade ago. So all these companies have been making strides over the last close to 20 years. But of course, you cannot get into the market doing the same service and building the similar kind of product. So that's the reason why, what we are building is something more niche, for example, 20 years ago, there was no there is no burgeoning small satellite market, but today there is. Today there is need for dedicated launches, where like customers is I need to go to a specific location at a specific time in a specific schedule, you know, where typically these big rockets by SpaceX or Blue Origin would not be their ideal solution for, right? So we are addressing a niche market, you know, which will be unique, highly differentiated, and then has potential to generate, you know, good amount of revenues and build a solid model out of it. On top of that, you know, expand the total addressable market as we go further. You know, so we have what we believe is that as a startup, it will be very extremely challenging. But you know, we have to identify those niche areas to serve and you know, show our competence, and then you know, capture a good market share in those segments, right? So it's a pretty challenging and very exciting journey which we are after. And in fact, for example, if Skyroot becomes, you know, successfully start launching satellites to space in the next few years, I think we will be one of the you know, front runners in this segment, not only in India and the world as well.
I also want to talk about the Vikram-S rocket itself, right? When these global companies came up with their rockets, we often heard, like, you know, oh, SpaceX's Falcon, the Falcon rockets, Falcon 9 and so on, are these very innovative new rockets. And my understanding is that Vikram-S also has some very niche and, I mean, specific qualities about itself, right? Could you explain how the Vikram-S rocket itself differs from maybe what regular launches go by?
Yeah. So basically, you know, when we started off in 2018, our core focus was to develop Vikram 1, you know, which is an orbital vehicle which will launch satellites to orbit, which has a capacity of close to, you know, 300 kilograms to put into, you know, orbit. However, as we, you know, did our progress and then as we made, you know, our manufacturing, and then, like, you know, when we started building, we realized that we need to build another vehicle where we can test majority of the technologies, you know, and then in fact, like, go to build a rocket which will reach space and which tests almost 80% of the technologies of Vikram 1. And then in 2020, you know, that's when we started designing Vikram-S as a test bed. In fact, it's more like a test rocket to test most of the technologies going into Vikram series of space launch vehicles or Vikram series of rockets. And that's when we started off. And in fact, within 2 years from when we started, we successfully launched to space, you know, which is like over 80 kilometers, and then did all the necessary testing which was required, and also like carried three payloads from customers as well along with the vehicle, and then launched. And what is different in this vehicle is that, you know, just like the other Vikram vehicles, this is an all carbon fiber structured built vehicle. You know, the entire core structure of the vehicle is built with carbon fiber, making it India's first in the space sector, and also one of the first few in the world, you know, to use all carbon fiber you know, rockets. And also it uses 3D printing in many of the components which go into the rocket, etc. So we're using two advanced technologies, you know, making it lighter, better, more efficient, and also a very low cost test bed, you know, for testing majority of our technologies. And in fact, like, we're very proud that, you know, within 2 years we're able to launch and then succeed in the first launch itself, which is the rarest of the rare events in, you know, even on an international scale. And then we are able to get a lot of data from this launch, which will be very useful over the other orbital vehicles, Vikram 1, 2 and 3, which we are actively developing and going to launch in the next few years.
What is this data that you will get from these from this launch? What kind of data are you taking?
Yeah. So just to go back, so basically Vikram-S is more like a space vehicle, but it doesn't go to orbit. That means it doesn't put satellites into orbit. Orbit is anything where it will sustain. The satellite will stay there for very long, for a few years, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years into orbit. That requires giving the satellite very large velocity, something like, you know, close to 8 km/s kind of velocity needs to be given so that the satellite can orbit. But this rocket, whatever we launch, Vikram-S is a smaller rocket. You know, it goes to space. That means it crosses 80 kilometers, you know, but it doesn't sustain. It then falls back into the sea. So it's just a 5 minutes mission, you know, from launch to splashdown. It is just 5 minutes. In these 5 minutes, the rocket is subjected to extreme environments, you know, for example, vibration, a lot of heat which gets generated by a rocket moving at 5 times the speed of sound. You know, so a lot of, so basically what we test is all the thermal protection systems which requires to, which protects the rocket to that goes into space, and you know the aerodynamics which needs the rocket needs to go through as it launches to space is gets validated, and then the lot of electronic packages which will be used to do various functions in the rocket, like the power systems, like the batteries, and there is telemetry. The rocket needs to send data back to ground. That's where you get all the data back on what, how the rocket is performing. So that's called a telemetry system. So the telemetry system is also proven here, and there's a tracking system where the ground radars, for example, we launched to Sierra Gorda. So Sierra Gorda has like very cutting edge radars which track the rockets even at very high speeds and very far away. Even the rocket goes more than 80 kilometers, it can track it. That needs a very active signal coming from the rocket, which needs an electronic package. So like this, several systems, almost like 12 different electronic packages are tested on this. Your thermal protection system is tested. All the carbon fiber structures, the technology has been proven. The same that the propellant, the chemical propellant which is used to create the thrust in the rocket, the same propellant will be used in the other Vikram series. That also has been proven successfully. And then all our design methodologies, testing methodologies, all get validated through this, giving huge confidence on our further launch vehicles. And because the vehicle is going to space, in fact, like there is one of the payloads is given by Space Kids India, which also launches regularly on ISRO vehicles, they put their payload built by students across the world, and they measured various data also through this launch from Earth to space and then back to Earth. They got very good data for their experiments, student experiments as well, right? So it's been like a very good vehicle which gives us a lot of it tests a good amount of systems, and if you add, it looks like almost like 80% of the tech which goes in the other vehicles, orbital vehicles, gets tested in a very low cost vehicle which in a 5 minutes flight.
If I'm looking at it correctly, the first mission was sort of a proof of concept, right? It was a demonstrator. Correct, showing that yes, we can do this. So how long does it take, will it take you to go from, say, a proof of concept to the actual final, now we are space ready, we can take missions, we can just sort of do a regular cadence?
So basically, and in fact, like one more point, additional point which I didn't mention is, in fact, this is also a test for getting an authorization for a rocket launch, which is as difficult as building and launching a rocket. It's as difficult as rocket science to actually get the proper authorization, insurance, liability, and all the legal formalities in the government first time for a rocket launch. Because India has a lot of international liabilities as well as a spacefaring nation, all needs to be met, and then it's legally something has to be launched from the country. It's a very, very tough problem to solve. And Vikram has launched, has actually undergone all that process to launch, which established a new process of launching something extremely complex as a rocket from a country. Right? That is also a test, as a pilot for creating capability that in India, even the legal regime, even that is solved to get into the market. So that makes us more market ready than ever before. And having said that, now that Vikram is a space proven vehicle, and it is now proven to go to space and do the necessary experiments, etc. Now the next, our core focus is in a much larger revenue generator, which is Vikram 1, which launches satellites to orbit, which is where the ripe market exists today. So that we are targeting within a year from now. So Vikram is launched this month, and within a year from now is when we want to launch Vikram 1, which will put commercial satellites into orbit. And from then on, it's like a problem to solve is to reach orbit successfully and then sustainably produce more and more rockets in a way that you can do more launches per year and serve more number of customers per year, establishing ourselves as a very good player in the international market, and do as many launches as possible so that good revenues can be generated to sustain the development going forward.
Got it. Will you manufacture your own rockets? Are you setting up manufacturing as well?
Yeah, so partly we do, but you know, for the first couple of you know launches, a good portion of it is you know manufactured outside with our you know vendor partners whom we work very closely with. You know, however, like you know, we'll be doing more and more in-house manufacturing as we go further and get into mass production phase.
Got it. So we have the first private space mission now. We the other day Agnikul did the first private launch pad was inaugurated. So in this entire journey of sort of privatizing India's space sector, so to speak, what is next? What do you expect will be next? And what is required from here on?
Yeah, so next is, you know, I think one big, you know, change will happen when we regularly start from India, you know, the private companies regularly start launching satellites on a regular basis, you know, maybe like probably when we reach one launch a month, that I think is a great a significant milestone, because today, I think only US does it, only private companies in US today do it. No other country, and also like you know bit of a China, it's like very thin line between the government and private agencies, but still, I think in global sector, I think only US is properly doing it. And then you know we entered that big league of countries where that capability exists, and you know because the market demand exists, then there is like sustainable revenues coming into picture that builds a very strong global space company from India. So having you know launch vehicles, you know launch pads, and then launching regularly to space, you know, and on top of this is one segment of the market. The other segment is launching satellites. For example, recently Dhruva and Pixel have launched you know satellites to space. They are small satellites, and then you know more and more companies launching, building their own small satellites and launching them. You know, will increase overall space market and competence for India's private sector. And so basically launch vehicles is one sector, and satellites in one sector. And the third big pillar is this space services. That means like using this satellite data, you know, for providing service to the consumers. You know, like you were asking, you know, how it affects the consumers. So one thing that time I discussed was communication, but still there are a lot of consumers who use space-based images, image analytics. You know, for example, the farmers. You know, the farmers know... get to know where the pests, the cameras in on satellites actually can detect where the pests are there on the plants, you know, and they also come to know when you can irrigate the plants, you know, if they can through thermal, for example, infrared sensors, you can identify when the plants need to be irrigated, when they are dry, that you know you need to irrigate them. You know, this can increase the food production by almost 30%, you know, etc. But of course, today they don't use it because it's expensive service. But as the services get cheaper, it becomes probably open to all farmers. And also, the fishermen find the right you know locations to get fish through, you know, satellite images, and then urban planning is done you know based on satellites. You know, so all these services need companies to analyze these images, come up with analytics, come up with you know intelligent details out of this, which will what we call it as something more like an intelligence out of this, which will help a lot of industries to do what they want to do more effectively, right? So three pillars: launch services, building satellites, and then these satellite services, which will go to the you know several industries and common man. So all these three pillars will are you know equally important, and there are private companies in all the three sectors in the country. All are growing at a very fast pace, and when all three become you know quite mature in the next 2-3 years, which we believe will happen, it becomes a very good strong space economy coming from the private sector in India.
Of course, this is sort of the beginning, right? We're at a very nascent stage when it comes to space. Could you put that in context, in the global context? Where are we? You know, how long will it take for us to go from that, say, 2% to 10 and then 20 and so on?
Yeah. So in fact, like as I mentioned before, as a space-faring nation, that means from the government point of view or the capability point of view, we are already in the top 5 nations in the world. You know? So only when it comes to, so that means the technology exists, the capability exists, everything exists. So that's the reason why, in fact, you know, for whether it is Skyroot or other companies who are like doing good in this sector, all of them are being built on the infrastructure and the ecosystem, which has been built in the country, which is the top 5 in the world already. So it makes us easier to get to the market, which will happen in the next 2 to 3 years. But when it comes to how much pie in the international market we can get, it is, I think, depends on the success of how the private companies, grab the international market and, sustainably be able to raise capital, because it's a capital intensive, domain, and then, build products which are so innovative that, they compete on a global scale and then have a larger share overall. So maybe I think it would take probably close to 10 years to reach the 10% mark, because the sector is very competitive. But even reaching 10% of the global scale by a country, by one country itself, is a very, very aspirational achievement, I think, which can be achieved. But the success of which will be only seen by the success of the companies and the kind of internal market also which we can generate. The one is capturing the international market. The other thing is how much market we can generate as a company, as a country overall, is also what matters. The moment that grows, even the overall share also grows, because domestically you'll have an inflow. Like, for example, China has a very interesting domestic market per se, which is pretty, pretty, very large. So that also a good domestic market and also a larger percentage of the global market together can create overall 10% probably within a decade from now should be a reality.
And how much of this depends on the space policy, which we've been hearing that it's in the works, it will be there in a matter of months now. How much of this success depends on the space policy coming?
Yeah, so in fact, like, space policy is more like a pathway to do whatever the space companies, private space companies want to do, so it's in the very final phases. And, even before the space policy comes, the government already started authorization. For example, we got authorization to do a rocket launch, and multiple companies got authorization to launch their satellites and payloads. Right. So because authorization already has come, even without the policy, I think there is no stopping the private sector to grow anyway. But once the policy comes in, it becomes more and more structured, where like more players can have a streamlined way of getting approvals and authorizations in a very quick and fast way, so that the industry grows. So basically, policy is more like a window or a pathway, to achieve what we need. But once the government has announced that, itself means that there is no limit or there is no limits of anything what can be held can be done in the country, basically, in the private sector point of view. So policy coming itself is a event that anything can be done in the private sector, of course, with the proper authorization, with the proper due process. So I think even without the policy officially being rolled out, authorizations are being given with the ministry, Department of Space level, where InSpace is a nodal agency for taking care of all of that. So basically, the whole economy, the private space sector, will be based on the policy which is going to come as a backdrop, basically. So that itself is required to even allow the player to do something which is already announced and already being authorized right now, and then officially the streamlined policy is also going to come out soon.
Last question, Pawan. Why space for you? You're a mechanical engineer from IIT Kharagpur, if I'm not wrong. How did you decide that, okay, we'll do a space startup, especially in a country like India?
Yeah. So a very good question. So in fact, like, while I was doing mechanical engineering at IIT Kharagpur, I used to watch the news of ISRO launches and SpaceX launches, etc. And it was so fascinating for a mechanical engineer to see rockets go into space. And I always felt that rockets are the most challenging machinery or most fascinating machinery ever built by humans, right? So that, as a engineer, is always very infatuated by the technology per se. And then luckily ISRO came to my our campus at IIT Kharagpur in 2012, which rarely it does, and that year it has come. And then I thought, I definitely have to get into ISRO and start my career into these fascinating machines, which I felt is the most adventurous and most challenging thing a mechanical engineer engineer could do. And then luckily got into the Vikram Sarabhai Space Center of ISRO, which is the rocket center of ISRO. And there, like, the fascination for rockets have grown into an obsession, which I put it as, like, over 6 years. You know, I've been part of the space program for the JSLV Mark 3, which is the largest rocket ever built in the country. You know, I've been seeing various great launch vehicles being produced out of India, like PSLV, SSLV, you know, etc. Right? So with this kind of exposure, you know, I thought, and also I realized the opportunity India has, when it comes to the cost, when it comes to the innovation which can be done in the country, when it comes to the capability and the infrastructure which already exists in the country. So it was natural to me. And even during the college days, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And once I joined ISRO, naturally thought, when I realized that there's a great business opportunity which can come, which also, like, will help in the growth of the nation. It was like probably like magic, where like you wanted to be an entrepreneur, then you were a rocket scientist, and then there is a great business case, for it, which also will be like pride for the country. So everything came together, and the result of all that is the idea to start a company which will one day become a world leading space tech company. And that's when Skyroot started in 2018. And then that time there was no policy, absolutely nothing. There was no aerospace company which has raised large capital. It was all the beginning. But of course, we took the leap of faith that, we need to start something, really build something really, really valuable. And that's where that particular leap of faith resulted in, for example, the recent rocket launch, which we all celebrated. And then, like, it gives great hope, raised a good amount of capital, which people felt that it's impossible to raise. People felt that there will not be any policy which will enable launching rockets, and we launched it this month, right? So everything came together perfectly well, just because of the initiative in 2018, where the fascination for rockets and getting into ISRO, and then getting the domain expertise, and then like the great opportunity of India right for us, all that culminated into till now the first probably what we call the prarambh for Skyroot through this rocket launch. But of course, there is a long way to go for us to establish as a very strong international highly competitive player, which we all set to do in the next few years.
Got it. Has it been difficult? Has it been difficult to raise funds? Is it still difficult? Are the big funders taking notice now?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the biggest challenge would be in this sector is to raise the necessary capital, because, for example, most of the funds have a thesis, right? So, and space is never in the thesis of any fund when we started off. When we raised our seed round, there was no fund which had a thesis for space. It was absolutely new. And, there was not even a policy to back investment by any fund. And we were glad that we have been supported by entrepreneurs who could take that risk, who had that vision, like, Mukesh Bansal, etc., who wrote our seed check in 2018, and then Anil and Mahesh of Greenco, who led our Series A. They all have been entrepreneurs. I've seen disruptive companies unfold before them, and they've seen great success in their sectors. And then that capital is what they reinvested in new entrepreneurs into space entrepreneurship. And then it took good amount of time to come to a level where a large fund like GIC, global investor of global standards like GIC, coming in and putting a 50 million kind of a check in the sector. Entire journey has been super challenging at each phase, whether it is seed stage, Series A, Series B. Every time we raised capital, that was the largest capital raise in the sector, and it was basically breaking those glass ceilings at each stage was very, very challenging to go to a set of investors, showing them what is the value creation which exists in the sector, and then making them believe that whatever we're doing is possible and it is at global scale, etc. It's been a very challenging journey, especially on raising capital, but glad that, that really whatever we have done has really fueled and culminated into a successful rocket launch to space, which is by itself a very rare event in the industry globally.
Owen, thanks a lot for joining us. This has been very, very interesting. And I really hope you take us all to space one day.
Thanks a lot, Prasidh. Wonderful talking to you. In fact, our core mission at Skyroot is to open space for all. And one day, our dream is to take everybody to space. And thanks a lot for this wonderful conversation. And all the best to you as well. Thank you.
And that's it for this week's episode. Please do let me know what you thought of it and what else you would want me to cover. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Undertecker. Yes, you heard that right. That's UNDERTECHER. You can also give us feedback at HT Smartcast. We're present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And please do log on to htsmartcast.com and listen to all of our productions.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.